Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm Dave Custy, your host, and my guest today is Deborah Holbrook, the coordinator of Mercy Hospital's Sexual Assault Forensic Examination Program. Mrs. Holbrook is a graduate of Johns Hopkins School of Radiologic Technology and the Union Memorial Hospital School of Nursing in Baltimore, Maryland. After working in the field of critical care, Mrs. Holbrook founded a forensic nurse examiner program in Delaware that became a model of the United States. In 2002, she testified on Capitol Hill before a Senate Judicial Subcommittee on Crime and Drugs on behalf of the bill that was signed into law in 2005 as the DNA Justice Act. She is the recipient of numerous international awards, including the Delaware Nurse of the Year, the International Magnet Nurse of the Year, and the International Association of Forensic Nurses Pioneer Award. Mrs. Holbrook has authored grants totaling over $6 million to benefit victims of major persons crimes and lectures nationally for the Office for Victims of Crime in Washington. Founded SANE, Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner, programs across the country. She is currently coordinator of forensic nursing at Mercy Medical Center in Baltimore, which coordinates care to victims of interpersonal violence for all hospitals in Baltimore City. She now serves on a national review panel for the Department of Justice to review federal grant awards and is a frequent lecturer. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio, Deborah.
Hi there. Thank you, David.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. Give me a little short bio.
Short bio. I became a nurse here in Baltimore, was a Baltimorean all my life, and we bought a farm over on the Eastern Shore at the Maryland-Delaware line about 20 years ago. And was living a quiet, peaceful life over there and started doing forensic work. And Joe Biden happened to be senator in Delaware at the time, started working a little closer with him. And we became very good partners within that state for victims of crime as part of his Violence Against Women Act. And testified on Capitol Hill and got a call from Baltimore at Mercy asking if I would come and run things here in the city for Mercy, and it's just been a marvelous ride ever since. I started here about 5 years ago and have taken things to a new level in what we're able to provide victims of crime here in the city.
Well, tell me more about the evolution of the Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Center.
Well, I was a nurse in the emergency department in a small hospital, not here in this state. And I was watching what was happening with victims when they came in who said they were sexually assaulted, especially those victims who said that they thought maybe somebody had given them a drug and raped them because they didn't know the details of what happened, but they knew, they felt like they'd been assaulted. Their clothes were on backwards or missing. There were periods of memory loss. They had no alcohol on board, so they couldn't attribute it to being intoxicated. And I listened as medical staff and other people told these folks that that certainly couldn't have happened here. That only happens in really big cities. And, you know, we're sure you're fine. Just relax. Follow up in a couple months for disease checks if you need it. But we're sure nothing like this could have happened to you. And then I, as a untrained forensic nurse at the time, got my first sexual assault case. And the instruction that I got was, here's the rape kit. See you in about 4 hours. Get inside that room. Do it just like the instructions say, and good luck. And I left the room that night saying, there's got to be a better way. Evidence should not be collected this way. People should not be treated this way when it's one of the most devastating times of their life, being children and adults. And there's got to be a better way. So I found a program at Rutgers University at the time. This was many years ago. And got trained, came back. Of course, there was no money for starting such a program. So I kind of put myself on call, got permission from administration, and stayed within an hour and a half of that hospital for about 2 years. Very seldom went away so that I could be on call at no pay, no pay for the cases, to come in when a rape case came in. Because I had to do some sort of a feasibility study about how many we had. Taught myself how to write grants because we didn't have any grant writing programs that could mentor me. And the rest has been sort of history, as you will.
Tell me about the progression from there on toward the current time and the FNE and the programs that you initiated and are currently involved with.
Well, as we started coming up with better ways of caring for victims who have been sexually assaulted, who were adults, it led into looking to see what children needed. And so back when I was at my other program, we founded a program that also took care of children because there was just some concerns that, you know, when they were acutely injured, there was nobody on call 24/7 to take care of them. And that's one of the most important things that you have to make sure you promise your community. Saying that you have a forensic nursing program is wonderful, but what Mercy does is assure that there is somebody there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have 1 to 2 people on call many hours of the day during historically tracked busy times. We have somebody stationed there who will take care of them immediately. And that's so important for the community to know that if you're an attorney and you're sending somebody in, that there is actually going to be somebody there, even if it's on Christmas night or 3 o'clock in the morning or in a snowstorm, that there will be somebody there to take care of them. So what this led to is folks in the community, police, attorneys, shelters, advocates, sending us other patients other than those that were sexually assaulted, because it's the same type of DNA collection. It's the same forensic medical exam. We do a forensic history, which is very different, a medical history that's different than a police history. It's all about taking care of the overall wellness of that patient. And then we provide a head-to-toe physical exam. And as we're looking for injury, we're taking pictures. We're collecting the DNA. And we wrap it all up. We make sure that they have advocacy because somebody needs to follow them through this process that they're in now, whether they choose to go to court, whether they don't choose to go to court, whether they choose to cooperate with law enforcement, whatever their decision is, we make sure that there's somebody there. It cannot be the nurse. This is the one time in nursing that I can't be an advocate. I always advocate for the rights of my patients, but I cannot be their friend or their shoulder to cry on or the person who calls them later because it will bias the evidence that I've collected. So we make sure that they have that. So we started using a light called an alternate light source. And we have done some amazing work with this. It's one of those lights that traditionally looks like a black light that you see on the crime scene shows that shows things that glow or fluoresce. And it lets us know where to swab for things like saliva, semen, lubricants, trace evidence, fibers and hairs, things like that. And we started using a top-end model that actually was strong enough that we could use wavelengths of 300, 400, and 500 that were strong enough to penetrate the first layers of the skin, to kind of see beneath it. And we know from forensic science that blood will never glow. It will never fluoresce. We knew that it would absorb light, and it looks darker. So on a clean surface of their body, we started seeing imprints of the markings that they described in their history. So if they were strangled, we could see where the thumb was, where the fingers were, where the fingertips were. And that was incredibly powerful because strangulation victims almost never have visible signs of injury from their assault. And if somebody is a dark-skinned pigment in person, they rarely have an injury that we can see. So now being able to use this light source on victims of crime who have no visible injury, where we can show that, yes, indeed, it's there, has really changed the way we practice not only forensic medicine, forensic nursing, but the way the attorneys are able to go forward with cases and police officers and detectives that they wouldn't have been able to do before. And so now we do victims of interpersonal violence, strangulation, gunshots, and domestic violence. We are able to do the suspect of the crimes also and collect their evidence to prove there's a corroboration between that victim and that patient at that time. And we are proud to host the only mobile unit in the state that actually goes where the patient is if they're too acute to come to our forensic unit.
Oh, really?
So we'll go to shock trauma, or we'll go to an ICU at Hopkins, or we'll go where that patient is because the care needs to be done even though that patient can't be transferred.
It sounds like a terrific program. It sounds like it's well thought out. And how long have you been doing it now?
I have been doing this work for almost 20 years. Mercy's program is 20 years old in January. We're having a 20th anniversary Bull and Oyster Roast as a celebratory event just to let the community know that we're here. You will never see billboards advertising this program. We never see a happy case. We only take care of people in the saddest times of their lives. And so being able to applaud the work of my 31 nurses that work for us at Mercy, being able to applaud the work of the Sisters of Mercy in their mission to take care of underserved women and children, to just let the community know that we're here is just a gift, and we're so thankful that you were able to give us that platform here today.
Oh, well, my pleasure. I am just taken by this. I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing to have 24/7. You've got 31 nurses. You have the best in medical attention, and you'll be able to get rock-solid legal cases. Now, what about the mental aspect?
They are sometimes in shock. Sometimes they're angry. Sometimes they're just exhausted. You can imagine how anybody would go through a really devastating experience, sexual assault or domestic violence. Correct. And so it runs the gamut of every emotion that you can imagine, as well as for the nurses. And so we're able to deal with that. We make sure that we have advocates from the community, advocates from Mercy's social work department or family violence response program that can come and be with them and sit with them and not leave, to follow up with them afterwards to provide counseling. It's an ongoing, I say it's not a teaching moment, it's a teaching continuum, because we're through them, that we provide somebody to be with them throughout the whole process and even after court, so that there's somebody that they can talk to. And I think that's really valuable, because what I do as a forensic nurse is fantastic, but when I'm finished, I'm finished until it's time to go to court or educate police or attorneys to what they need to know that I did. I can't be there for the patient. So it's a gift that we can provide somebody that will be.
And it sounds like every aspect of this terrible ordeal is taken effect, and it's not just a one-off, which is kind of what I'm here for too. My radio station is going to be a continuous process, and I hope that you consider coming back and keeping this update on everything that happens in your program.
I would be honored.
Because it's a valuable, wonderful program, I think. Is there anything like this in Baltimore? And my question really is, do you network with other similar type programs?
Oh, we do. We certainly do. Through the Board of Nursing, you need to be certified in order to do this work as a nurse. And so we network with certified nurses from not only our state, but through the International Association of Forensic Nurses. I just got back, actually, from California from their international symposium, where you network with your peers from across the country and across the world. And that only makes you stronger. It's important that we get published. It's important that we conduct research studies, that we stay really current in our fields, and that we do peer review on many charts. Every chart is peer reviewed, and a large percentage of those are also peer reviewed anonymously. The chart is certainly anonymous. The nurse is anonymous. Every identifier is removed. And per our state's requirements, we make sure that, you know, that we do large peer reviews so that our work is current and relevant and correct.
Well, hopefully I can help with that, because I'm starting out doing all recorded shows, but as the business develops, I'll be doing live and recorded shows. And so that means that we can network with like-minded or similar field across the world. Something
absolutely, and I'm happy to give you contacts to make those connections for people who are doing amazing work like we are here in Baltimore.
Such a valuable program. Just really taken with this. I'm really glad something like this is around.
Thank you. It's one of those programs that most people don't like to think about the dark side. You might want to watch it on television, you know. It's just sad, really traumatic. And so most people don't really want to know a lot about us. It's not cocktail party conversation, let's put it that way. When my children were little and said, "Mommy, where were you last night?" It's not something you came home and talked about. But it's absolutely what you want to know is there if, heaven forbid, or your family or your friend ever goes through this. That's when people want to know about it.
And it wasn't too long ago where domestic violence was not even considered worthy for the police to go to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you figure as a young country, we're a very young country, the United States is, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not that old. And if you look back in our history, the term rule of thumb meant, you know, you could beat your wife, she's your property,
right,
but you couldn't use anything wider than your thumb. And so it became passed down as that's a man could control his home,
yeah,
the way a man.
If the police ever came, it was kind of a wink and a nod and see you later type of thing. You know?
Sure it is. And I would dare say, I would dare say that there are places in this United States that, that have that same mentality now.
It's a shame.
It is.
Okay, let's go on to Be More Safe, the new app. Tell me about
it. I'm so excited. This
is.
There's not much in this business anymore that, that gets me excited. But
I mean, your initial reaction just then tells me that.
It is. It's wonderful, and it's dynamic, and it's going to be ever-changing, and what the community needs right now. What we saw was a need to provide patients with education. We need to provide it to the community. We set up at fairs and at hospitals. We do in services. We try to be everywhere somebody wants us. But sitting there with a booth with brochures and pamphlets is not where we are as a culture today, especially not young people who we are trying to get the message out to, because that's the main age of patients that we're seeing. They don't want a brochure anymore. We knew we needed to do something dynamic, and we needed to do something technologically sound. And that's what Be More Safe has become. It's where people want to be. They want to be with social media. They want to be something online. They can download and get their answer at the moment that they have the question. And that's what the Be More Safe app is. It makes life safer for our patients, because when we used to send them home with packets and brochures when they were victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, if that perpetrator was home, if they were at home, that person's life was now at risk. So we came up with things like shoe cards, and we came up with a personal safety plan that they could roll up and put in an empty tube of lipstick or a tampon container or a sanitary napkin, so that it was something that the perpetrator in their home or their life would be less likely to find, where they could get their plan together. Still certainly can offer that, especially in this age of blind reporting, where you do not have to report to the police, and we can do a full forensic exam on your behalf and hold it for a year and a half until you make a decision to or not to report. And that has changed the dynamics of what we do, and people don't know about that option.
Well, explain that fully to me. You don't have to tell the police. You can just go to Mercy and get this done. And
absolutely.
And
absolutely.
The alleged perpetrator doesn't have to know anything.
Correct. Correct.
Wow, that's great.
Say that we know that most sexual assaults are committed by an acquaintance.
Sure.
We know that historically. Some areas may never see a stranger rape. We have a certainly higher percentages in a busy city, but you don't have that as you get into rural areas. You don't have stranger rapes that often. Very rare. And because of that, if you know your perpetrator and they know you, you're very vulnerable. They know where you live, where you work, where your family's, you know, your habits, where people will come and go from school. And suppose they rape you and they say, go ahead and call police. Go ahead. Tomorrow it's going to be your daughter. Next week might be your mother. She'll never have a safe moment coming in from work again, getting out of her car. You may know from the crime scene shows that you've got 5 days to collect your evidence collected. Right? 120 hours generally. But you may not be ready to report that. You got to get your ducks in a row to where you feel safe and figure out what you're going to do to get that evidence collected. That's what this provides. It's a federal law that has been given to the states that says your state doesn't get violence against women money if you don't offer this to your patients. So it's one of the few things I think that the government has done right.
Doing right.
In this case. And so you don't have to have a police complaint number in order to move forward with providing them with that advocacy, right? That evidence collection, that the medicines to keep them from getting diseases. All of those things that we provide, that peace of mind, they can get. And we have a special blind reporting evidence locker, strict chain of custody, and that case is kept for 18 months or longer at the patient's request. And then we will keep the pictures and the report forever, but that actual physical kit with swabs and trace evidence will be held. And then if they get to a place where they're in a better place to report, they know it's there. If not, that's their choice. They certainly don't. We don't encourage one way or another. So that's pretty powerful. But the community doesn't know about this. So that's one of the things that this app provides. It is a phone app that's free of charge. It is for all iPhones and Androids, which I understand. I'm not a techie. I'm not a kid, but I understand that this is the vast majority of the market out there. I've heard numbers like that's 95% of the market, so that's pretty darn good.
It's covering it.
We're hoping to have 100% of the market at some point, but right now 95 is fine. And what it does is it walks you through all the options that we're able to provide. Through your own cell phone, you can ask your own questions. So it's both proactive and reactive. Because it's letting you know in advance about what you would need to collect, what you need to share with a friend, safety, who provides services. And then certainly if you need those services for yourself or somebody in your family or a friend, they're there at the touch of a button. That's kind of our slogan for this, is care when you need it at the touch of a button. And to our knowledge, it's one of the first. I know that D.C. has one. It's not like ours, but it's they do have an app. And we don't know of another safe program in the country we're looking that has one. So what we did was we made it user-friendly for both folks who are assaulted in Baltimore City and outside of Baltimore City, anywhere in the country, so that it actually will give you the hotline for where you need care. And they will put you in touch with the safe program or the SANE program in your area. Ours goes as far as to say it GPSs wherever you are. So you can hit a button on how to get to Mercy, and it'll get you there.
Wow.
Well, it certainly won't ride you there, but it will GPS you there, which for this old lady, I think that's just amazing.
It is amazing. I was just thinking the same thing. When you and I were kids, we wouldn't even dreamed of anything like this.
We didn't even have MapQuest back then.
It's
phenomenal.
It's great, too, to have it 24/7, but you can't make the call. You use this app and still get all the knowledge that you need to.
And you don't even have to go and search for who could be your advocate.
Really?
We've got a button right there that you push to talk to a hotline, and you can be anonymous. Or you can, you know, you can share, and they can provide their services and get you where you need to be if medical is not what you need. It gives you so much, including 911, at the touch of a button by just going through a few simple screens. It speaks to people where they are. It doesn't say, what happens if I need to urinate? Do I need to save the urine? It says, what if I have to pee? It talks to people in a very basic terminology so that people can get it no matter where they are.
I'm starting to get excited about himself.
It is.
It is exciting. Do you think in the last 5-10 years that more people have been seeking help in domestic violence? And with this app, I think it will be even tenfold. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know what it's going to bring because this just rolled out with a little over a month ago.
But you make it so easy.
I know that we've got hits all over the country.
Yeah, if you make it so easy, that's the other thing, too. The easier it is.
I will tell you a funny story.
Sure.
It's not exactly funny, but it speaks to the mindset of some people. I was working in a hospital, again, not in Baltimore. And I got called in by the board, and they said, we really need to think about closing this program. And I said, why? Why? And they said, well, and this is not Mercy. Please let me say this is not Mercy.
Unequivocally.
Yeah, because your program is making people rape more.
What?
It's increasing sexual assault. there was almost, once I picked my jaw up from the table, there was almost nothing I could say intelligent to that remark. Because what this program does, what this app does, what this new website does, isn't increase sexual assault and domestic violence. It gives people a way of getting help that they never knew was available before. So yes, your numbers are going to go up. Of course they are. But I don't know that it's happening more or less. I don't think that that's a good determinant of
that. No, it isn't at all. This is working.
Exactly.
I mean,
so yes, our numbers are increasing. They're constantly increasing. I can remember sitting with Delaware State Police years ago when the price of gas was starting to skyrocket. And we sat in my office with state troopers and we said, our numbers are going to skyrocket in child abuse and domestic violence. Because when people have got stressors at home where they don't know if they can buy food or drive to work, that baby crying is going to set them over the edge. That wife spending a little extra at the store is going to set them over the edge. If that happens in domestic violence cases, you know, there's triggers and desperation that some folks, when the stock market had its crash, all of that. And just the whole national climate right now where I never grew up. I was born in 1960. I never grew up being afraid that my government wasn't in control. I never had that feeling.
Right.
I always knew that somebody was watching out. And I think that even my children, I hear it from my children in their late 20s, that they don't have that security. They don't have that security about their jobs, about their government, about anything being a sure, sound North Star.
We still come from a place where people would work one job their entire life. That is rare, if at all.
And if you wanted to work, there was a job for you.
Yes.
In whatever.
And a lot of jobs were handed down from, you know, family member to family member, too.
Correct. I grew up in Dundalk, Maryland, and we had Sparrows Point down there.
All right.
And you knew when you were in school, and we had General Motors, we had Western Electric, but you knew that most chances were, if you didn't go to college, you'd work down a point. But we called it down a point. One. So, but we don't have that anymore. And so because of that, I think, yeah, domestic violence numbers, child abuse numbers, yeah, absolutely, I think they're up right now,
right,
as opposed to when times were good.
Well, see, that's what I meant, that they're being reported more. I think that's the thing, and I think this app will help even more. Deborah, I appreciate you coming on. And
thank
you give
so much.
Some contact info and some more information on how people will get this?
I will. We have a website, www.bemoresafe, the letter B, M-O-R-E-S-A-F-E, mercy.org. It can tell you everything from how to be a forensic nurse to how to get care and get to us. The app is Be More Safe. It's B-M-O-R-E-S-A-F-E. You can get it from any Android or iPhone, and certainly download it. I encourage everybody to download it so you've got it. So it's a discussion point for parents and their children, for friends, for teachers, for counselors, anybody, and it's good all over the country.
Everybody should have it because it goes across race, color, creed, or income.
State boundaries.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Like I said, let's keep it going. Let's get the word out there,
we'll
you come back every so often when your schedule will permit it and come on the show and talk about the progression of More Safe and anything else you want to, and then hopefully we can network about it, too.
Thank you. I'll always make time to do this, and we have some exciting things in the future, so I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you. You've been listening to Deborah Holbrook, the coordinator of Mercy's Sexual Assault Forensic Examination Program. This is Dave Custy, and this is Baltimore Internet Radio.